Life Lessons Learned from Aliens by 11 Inches, read by Dodificus. The first civilization they came across that was advanced enough for Rodney to be genuinely impressed, without them being replicators, of course, which were also very impressive once you got past the part where they wanted to kill everyone in Atlantis and got their kicks out of sticking their hands in people's heads, was P1X887. A world of happy, smiling, lab coat clad scientists. Their team had been greeted by the Supreme High Chancellor as soon as they set foot on the planet, and the people of Medea, as the world was called, seemed very eager to share their technology. It was wonderful. Rodney was instantly suspicious. "You want to give it away? Just like that?" he asked. "You don't even know us. We could be planning to take over your planet." Shepard elbowed him in the ribs, hard. "That's just Rodney's way of saying, yes, we'd love to see your technology." The Chancellor was obviously a very wise man, as he had recognised Rodney's significance almost immediately. He seemed to be under the impression Rodney was team leader. Rodney felt it was in everyone's best interest not to correct him. "It is rare we meet travellers who have knowledge such as yours," he said, leading Rodney and the rest of the team towards what he'd said was their main research facility. He was an old geezer with a trimmed white beard, dressed in a long grey robe with bell sleeves. He also had a tall pointy grey hat that was a little more Harry Potter than alien. Shepard had already slipped and called him Dumbledore twice. "Well, very few people have quite the amount of knowledge I do, Your Honour," Rodney replied smugly. He threw Shepard a smirk. Shepard rolled his eyes. The Chancellor smiled. "The people of Medea hope we can trade with the people from the City of the Ancestors." "Yeah, the Ancestors," Shepard said, sounding uncomfortable. The Chancellor frowned at him. "And we hope to trade with you as well," Taylor added hastily. "If I could just see some of what your people are working on, that would be great," Rodney said, directing them back to the more important issue, his getting to see the technology. The Medean capital was a sea of large, dome-shaped glass buildings that reminded Rodney of beehives. The paved streets were relatively empty, but a quick glance around showed the buildings full of workers. The life science detectors confirmed this as well, like Rodney was going to walk around an advanced alien planet without checking a few things out first. He wouldn't be making that mistake again. Luckily, the Stargate was situated right outside what appeared to be the City Hall, so their journey was brief. Rodney liked this planet. Maybe this would finally be the planet that would provide them with something useful for fighting the Wraith, or at least something to make their daily lives easier. Half an hour and a tour of the primary laboratory facility later, he realised he was terribly, horribly wrong. This wasn't the planet of helpful wraith-haters. This was the blind date planet. "So you're telling me," he said, standing in the middle of one of the largest and most well-equipped research labs he'd been inside of in two galaxies, "everything in your culture is centered around finding a spouse?" "Not just a spouse, true love," said the Chancellor. "True love," Shepard murmured under his breath. Rodney tried to catch his eyes for a shared look of disgust, but Shepard was gazing straight at Chancellor Cupid. "You'll forgive us if we find that a little weird." "There is nothing more important than finding your true love," the Chancellor continued airily. "Without love, there is no reason to continue. It's the goal of everyone on Medea to help their fellow citizens find his or her love match." "So the giant supercomputer?" Rodney asked, gesturing to the lab across the hall. "It's for predicting love matches," the Chancellor supplied. "Fantastic," he muttered. "Another planet of crazy people, just what he needed." "What if someone doesn't want to find true love?" Ronan asked, crossing his arms over his chest. The Chancellor looked horrified. "I think what he means is, what about the people who want to wait?" Shepard asked. "Why would you deny yourself love?" the old man asked. He looked about ready to start lecturing, which was just one more experience Rodney really hadn't hoped to go through on this mission, when there came a crash from behind them. Rodney turned to see Taylor and a young man picking up several metallic objects that had fallen to the floor and placing them back onto a tray. "I'm very sorry," Taylor was saying. "I did not realize you were there." She reached for one of the objects. "No," the Chancellor cried. Before Rodney's very eyes, Taylor flickered out, like someone had hit a switch. In her place was Shepherd. Another Shepherd, because the real one was standing next to Rodney, his brows furrowing in confusion. "Ugh, this is gonna suck," Rodney said. "Yeah," agreed Ryan. "What is going on?" the Shepherd holding the object asked, only it was Taylor's voice, which was creepy and wrong, coming out of Shepherd's body like that. Shepherd, Taylor, climbed to her feet. "Why are you all looking at me like that?" The real Shepherd said, "This is weird." "Yeah," said Ronan. "I didn't know giant boxes of pancake mix could talk." The fact Ronan looked genuinely disturbed did not make his statement any less bizarre. "Right," Shepherd said slowly, squinting at Ronan. He turned back to Taylor. "Taylor, it doesn't look like any of us are seeing you as, well, you." Rodney eyed the old man, who seemed flustered. "It happened when she touched that device. What is it? It can't be ancient. She doesn't have the gene." He snapped his fingers. "Taylor, give it to me. Maybe there's a way to shut it off." "No, you mustn't," the Chancellor said. "The device makes other people see the wearer as whomever they desire the most." "This is an indication, my dear," he said to Taylor. "You are in need of love." "Huh," Shepherd said thoughtfully, while Taylor inspected the small, round device in her hand. Shepherd's hand. Shepherd's hand? Rodney froze. "Did you say the thing you desire the most? What do you mean by desire, actually?" "Like, in a man loves a woman kind of way, Rodney," Shepherd said, sounding irritated. "It's for finding love, not for finding friends." This was unbelievable. It was more than unbelievable, actually. It was impossible. For one thing, was the device telepathic? He hadn't seen any technology like that in the Pegasus Galaxy thus far. Just that Tok'ra memory tool he'd had a chance to look at when he'd been at Area 51. Was this an ancient device that had somehow been lost on Medea? But the more pressing question was, why the hell was he seeing Shepherd? If anyone was the love of his life, it was Sam Carter, even if she didn't know it yet. Ronan crossed his arms over his chest. "Your thing is broken. I don't see a person." Relieved, Rodney asked, "What do you see?" Clearly the device wasn't working properly. "A giant box of pancake mix." Rodney's hope fizzled and died. All four of them stared at Ronan, who raised his eyebrows in response. "I really like pancakes." "Well, there goes another food the Pegasus Galaxy's ruined for me," Rodney grumbled. "Does this mean you're pansexual?" Shepherd asked Ronan. "I don't know what that means," Ronan said. "Yes, let's just stand around here all day making jokes about Ronan having sex with pancakes," Rodney scoffed. "That'll be really productive. Chancellor, how do we turn this device off?" "You can't," the Chancellor responded. "It is programmed to remain on until the wearer finds his or her true love." "How does this help her find true love?" "Ah," said the Chancellor. He raised a finger in the air. "That is for the wearer to discover." "You're kidding," Rodney said, incredulously. "Is this your way of saying you don't know what it does?" The Chancellor's eyes narrowed. He looked ready to start on something when Taylor jumped in. "Perhaps it is best if we leave it on for now," she said. "It is not doing any harm, and this way we can take it back to Atlantis to study, if that is all right with you, Chancellor." "As long as there are plenty of single men in the City of the Ancestors," the Chancellor said jovially. "Please stop talking," Rodney said. On the way back to the Stargate, Rodney asked Ronan, "You seriously see her as pancake mix?" Ronan grunted an affirmative. "I guess there are worse things to see," Shepherd said slowly. "You know, like kids or animals. Or General Landry." Rodney frowned. Now I'm not sure I want to know what you're seeing. But Shepard kept looking at Taylor oddly. Rodney would be lying if he said he wasn't a little bit curious. Hey, here's a question, Shepard said. Do I seem kind of repressed to any of you? Believe me, Colonel, if anyone's repressed here, it's me, Rodney said. He was starting to get headache from having one Shepard on either side of him. He had a feeling his next session with Dr. Heitmeyer was going to be an important one. Shepard looked at him in surprise. What do you see, McKay? Nothing. Nothing important. You don't want to know, trust me. What do you see? A hot babe, Shepard said, tone implying this should be obvious. All he was missing was the duh at the end. Rodney glanced over his shoulder at Taylor. She smiled back thinly. It was unusual, seeing such a Taylor expression on Shepard's face. The real Shepard, meanwhile, was biting his lip, and Rodney was definitely not going to think about what two John Shepherds would look like together, with their identical pouts and crooked noses and hedgehog hair. No, it was crazy to think that, because either Rodney was seeing Taylor as Shepard due to a malfunction, or he was sick in the head. He sighed. We're pretty screwed up, aren't we? I'm good, said Ronan. Walking back home through the gate created a flurry of excitement. The normal, low-level buzz around the command room grew louder when Taylor stepped out from behind Ronan, and someone in the back exclaimed, "Holy Mother of God!" A bunch of people scurried over to the balcony to peer down at her. Elizabeth jogged down the stairs. "John, what's going on?" she asked. "Taylor touched something she shouldn't have," Shepard explained. "Taylor did," Elizabeth repeated, raising an eyebrow. Taylor gazed back innocently. It was such a Shepherd expression, one that always should have annoyed Rodney, but never did. That Rodney was taken aback. He had to get out of there. "I'm going ahead to the infirmary for my checkup. There's really nothing for me to report, and I have a lot of work to catch up on," he said, walking backwards toward the exit. Two Shepherds blinked at him, and Elizabeth frowned. The only one who wasn't paying attention to him was Ronan, who was busy staring at Taylor like she was a cheeseburger and he hadn't eaten in a week. Which was a horrible, horrible analogy, considering he saw her as pancakes. "Rodney," Elizabeth called. "Busy," he shouted back. "Wonder who he sees," he heard Shepard say as the doors whispered shut behind him. There wasn't anything in the ancient database on the device from Medea. Granted, he hadn't expected a search for hologram love machine to come up with much, but there wasn't a single file, anything that remotely resembled what he was looking for. He'd have to get Elizabeth on it later. His ancient was a tad more rusty than hers. After a few hours of searching, he did find a file with a few notes on the planet. His ancient wasn't great, but he definitely made out the words crazy and marriage and cult. Three words he never wanted to see put together. Rodney tensed when the doors opened, but it was just Selenka, carrying a tablet under one arm and pushing up his glasses with his free hand. "John is looking for you," Selenka said, instead of hello. Rodney barely managed not to roll his eyes at Selenka's use of Shepard's first name. If anyone should be seeing Shepard as their love match, it was him. "He'll just have to wait," Rodney said tersely. "I'm not at his beck and call." Selenka looked up from his tablet, pulling the stool to the lab bench closest to Rodney's console. "Are you hiding?"
"No,"
Rodney said. "But you never come into my laboratory unless you do not want anyone to find you," he said. "What are you talking about? I'm in here all the time," Rodney protested. "You said it smelled like a cabbage, and that being in here for too long made you long for death."
"No. I said your constant ramblings in check made me feel like I was trapped in a room with a kid from Exorcist," Rodney said.
He paused the scrolling words on the screen and took a seat opposite from Selenka. He wasn't getting anywhere with the database. "Although I've noticed the smell of cabbages has almost dissipated. Well done." Selenka snorted. "While you are not hiding from John, I have something you can look at." From the front pocket of his jacket, he retrieved a small, circular object.
The glass was a quarter inch thick, and it was framed by a thick piece of black plastic. Dr. Coleman found it in one of the abandoned rooms. It was covered in cobwebs, Zelenka said, while Rodney weighed it with his palm. While Zelenka went back to his tablet, Rodney continued to study the thing. He held it up to the light. There was a faint reddish sheen on the glass, but that was the only distinguishing feature he could pick out. Shepherd probably would have been able to figure out what it was. Shepherd had always had the uncanny ability to think outside the box, no matter what the situation. But then, in an amazing flash of insight, it came to him. "I've got it," Rodney exclaimed. Zelenka jumped, knocking his tablet to the floor with a loud clatter. "Kerpa drop," he swore. "What is it?" "I know what this is." Rodney held up the artifact proudly. It was so obvious. He didn't know why it had taken him so long to figure it out. This was exactly why being preoccupied with his and Shepherd's non-existent sexual relationship was a bad idea. Zelenka leaned forward. "Yes?" "It's a monocle, like you see in the movies," Rodney announced. Zelenka visibly deflated. Rodney put the monocle over one eye and squeezed the other shut, raising his chin. "What do you think? Do I look dignified?" "Dignity is impossible for you," Zelenka said. "Huh. I wonder what the ancients needed monocles for," Rodney mused. He didn't see any differently with it on. It was like wearing a pair of fake glasses. Even the reddish tint on the outside of the glass didn't do anything. It doesn't seem to have an actual purpose. "Perhaps it is for a costume," Zelenka said dryly. "What, for ancient Halloween?" On a bench against the wall sat a crate Zelenka and some of the other scientists had been using to keep ancient objects they thought were useless. Rodney began shifting through it. Maybe he could find something that went along with the monocle. "You didn't see a pipe in here, did you?" He stuck his head in the crate, pulling out all sorts of interesting, yet probably useless, artifacts. In the glee of discovery, he'd almost forgotten Zelenka was there, until Zelenka casually asked, "So, who do you see instead of Taylor?" Rodney's head shot up. He glared. "You've been waiting all day to ask me that, haven't you?" "I have," Zelenka admitted. He didn't sound ashamed. "Who I see is none of your business," Rodney said stiffly, like he'd let anyone know some malfunctioning alien doodad was telling him Shepherd was his one true love. "Fine. If you must know, I see Colonel Carter, of course. Who else would I see?" "Oh, I thought you would have seen John. My mistake." "Why would you think that?" Rodney asked, shocked. Zelenka's gaze shifted to something in the distance. "No reason," he replied slowly. "Zelenka, you disgusting little monkey. If you're not straight with me..." "Oh, straight," Zelenka said. He wagged a finger at Rodney. "That is a good one. Is it really so strange to think someone else has noted your... how shall I put this? Infatuation?" Rodney felt his heartbeat quicken. Oh no, he was not panicking just because Zelenka thought he had feelings for the most frustrating person in the Pegasus Galaxy. "Infatuation?" he echoed loudly. "That's the most ridiculous thing you've ever said to me. And yes, I'm including your theories on special relativity. Colonel Shepherd and I are friends. We're very good friends who happen to save each other's lives on a near daily basis. There's nothing romantic about it." "Okay," Zelenka said, but when he turned away, Rodney saw him rolling his eyes. That pissed him off. What made Zelenka think he knew Rodney better than Rodney knew himself? That was why he was a second-tier scientist while Rodney was in charge, because he jumped to conclusions without knowing the facts. He didn't know a single thing about Rodney if he thought that, and he certainly didn't know anything about friendship. And just because Rodney hadn't had many close friends during his lifetime didn't mean Rodney didn't understand his relationship with Shepherd for what it was. "What kind of person do you think I am?" he demanded. "Do you really think I've been carrying a torch for Shepherd this entire time? The entire 3 years we've known each other? All the times we've saved each other's asses and worked in close combat situations, relying only on each other for our very survival? all the time without either of us seriously dating anyone, because no one outside our team could possibly understand what we've been through? What, I ask you, what kind of person would that make me? Selenka's eyes narrowed. You know, Rodney, perhaps I would take you more seriously if you were not wearing the monocle. The next morning, when Rodney carried his tray over to their usual table, Ronan and Elizabeth were already there. Ronan was chowing down a stack of pancakes like he wouldn't get a chance to eat for another 7 years. Elizabeth's back was to Rodney, but he could see she wasn't eating. She was probably as grossed out by Ronan's eating habits as the rest of, civilized life. You know, considering a box of pancake mix is your one true love, this is really quite disturbing, Rodney said, taking the seat next to Elizabeth. Ronan paused. How come? He asked, mouth full. Rodney rolled his eyes and dug into his eggs. Elizabeth was staring at something in the distance, plate still untouched. And his curiosity was piqued. He asked, what's going on? Nothing, she answered, with a shake of her head. But then she nodded in the direction she'd been staring at, and Rodney glanced over. Rodney's chest tightened at the sight of two shepherds sitting together at a corner table. It wasn't them sitting with each other that was the problem, because Shepherd and Taylor ate together all the time. They were friends, after all. She'd been Shepherd's friend long before Rodney had magnanimously decided Shepherd was less of a clown than he previously thought. But the way the Shepherd on the left side was leaning back, head tilted, lips curled, that was horrifyingly familiar. He wondered what Shepherd saw when he looked at Taylor. He really couldn't imagine Shepherd would see anyone in Atlantis. An old girlfriend, perhaps? One of the many men and women who had thrown themselves at him off-world? That slut from the cloister? Chaya? What do you suppose John and Taylor are talking about? Elizabeth asked. That bimbo, Rodney muttered. Watch what you say about my pan, about Taylor, Ronan warned. Elizabeth was also peering at Rodney disapprovingly. He waved a hand dismissively. No, no, not Taylor. Whichever space babe of the week Shepherd's seeing in her place. Is that what you think he sees? Elizabeth wondered. She sounded amused. When he looked at her in surprise, she quickly started eating her breakfast. He narrowed his eyes at her suspiciously. Yeah, I don't know about that, Ronan said. Shepherd flirts a lot, but I don't think he loves any of those women. That's what the device is for, to show who you love. You see pancake mix, said Rodney irritably. You can't marry pancake mix, now can you? Ronan leaned forward with a knowing smirk. What do you see, McKay? I have to go back to the lab, Rodney said hurriedly. There were many things Rodney could be working on, including taking apart Taylor's hologram device. But he found the thing he wanted to sort out the most was the monocle. But there wasn't anything to really do to it. The plastic casing on the outer edge was seamless, and the glass appeared to be just that, glass. He was considering taking it over to the main labs to test different kinds of chemicals on it when the door opened, and in walked someone he'd really been hoping to avoid. Hello, Colonel, he said flatly. Shepherd's eyebrows shot up, and Rodney added, Well, I suppose since you're here, you might as well help me out on something. You see me as John? That wasn't Shepherd's voice. Rodney's stomach bottomed out as he had the horrible realization it was Taylor standing in the doorway, and he said hastily, Of course not, that was a joke. Why on earth would I see Colonel Shepherd as the love of my life? The very idea is laughable. See, this is me laughing. Ha! Rodney, Taylor said. There's something wrong with your matchmaking device, Rodney insisted. Taylor carefully sat on the stool nearest to the lab bench. That was unlike Shepherd. He preferred to peer over Rodney's shoulder or lean all over everything, like a big, slutty, leaning thing. You do not need to worry about me telling John, she said. I believe he is avoiding me. Why is that? He asked. Not entirely sure he wanted to know the answer. While her movements were all her own, it was amazing how the device managed to make Taylor's distasteful expression look identical to Shepherd's. Rodney would really have to get his hands onto some of that technology. But his focus on the device faded when Taylor said, "He became quite nervous when I realized he saw me as a man."
"What?"
Rodney demanded. "Shepherds into men? That can't be. I'm shocked. Shocked. That's... actually, that does make sense. So who does he see? Is it Kyrus from the Kid Planet? I knew that piece of jailbait Isles had a thing for him. My God, Shepard's practically robbing the cradle." "I am sure John did not sleep with Kyrus, Rodney," Taylor responded. "And even if he did, that was years ago. They have not seen each other since." "How do you know he hasn't? What with this whole homosexual double life he's been leading?" Taylor looked annoyed. Or at least, she was making the same face Shepard did when he was annoyed. "Because we would know if he was taking trips through the Stargate often enough to have a relationship with someone on another planet." "I suppose you have a point," Rodney admitted grudgingly. He narrowed his eyes at her. "So if Shepard's hiding from you, why are you here?" Taylor squared her shoulders. "It is very uncomfortable when everyone sees you as the person they desire. Everyone is acting very strange around me. Ronan keeps calling me pancakes, and even Elizabeth is not herself. I was hoping you, at least, would behave normally, since you have a difficult time telling someone you like them, even as a friend." "Thank you," Rodney said, touched. "What are you studying?" Taylor asked, nodding to the monocle. "I'm trying to figure out what the function of this is," he said. He held it between his thumb and forefinger. "It looks like half a pair of glasses."
"Yes, I'm aware of that," he snapped.
Taylor gingerly took it from him and lifted it towards the light. This gave Rodney the perfect opportunity to study the slope of Shepard's narrow jaw, the slight upturn of his nose. From this angle, his eyes were a soft green. Okay, so Shepard was hot. This wasn't news. It didn't mean Rodney was in love with him or anything. She handed the monocle back to Rodney. He was finishing putting it on just as Zelenka walked through the door, and immediately, Taylor shifted from Shepard to Ronan.
"Oh my God," Rodney said.
He gestured for Zelenka to stop moving. When he pulled the monocle off, Taylor was Shepard again. Rodney stared at the monocle in his hand and then back at Zelenka and Taylor. "Zelenka," he asked slowly, "you wouldn't by chance see Ronan when you look at Taylor, would you?"
"How did you know?" Zelenka gasped.
"Ronan?" Taylor asked. "That is even stranger than you seeing John, Rodney."
"You do see John," Zelenka smirked. "I knew it. Did I not say I knew?"
"You see Ronan," Rodney pointed out. "He is very tall and muscular," Zelenka said defensively. "He is, how'd you say, man candy."
"I would never say that," Rodney said.
"Neither would I," said Taylor.
"You have to do this," Rodney insisted.
"No," Taylor said stubbornly, "I will not. It's an important scientific breakthrough.
You want me to do this so you will know who everyone is in love with, and you can blackmail them," Taylor interrupted, glaring.
"I will not subject the others to your pettiness." Rodney crossed his arms over his chest. "You'll have to go in the control room eventually. I can wait." It turned out Taylor was far less frightening when she looked like Shepard, whose faces tended to be more ridiculous and menacing. She gave Rodney one long, last scowl and stormed down the corridor.
"I'll be waiting,"
he called to her back. She returned 10 minutes later. "Well, well, well," he said smugly. "Look who's come crawling back."
"I'd forgotten I have a meeting with Elizabeth," Taylor said coldly. "You may follow me in, but I will have nothing to do with your scheme."
"That's fine," Rodney said, moving aside so she could step through the doors. When he left by himself a few minutes later, it was in outrage. He'd been hoping for something funny, or at least something he could use against them. But everyone, literally everyone in the control room was in love with the same person. Elizabeth. That was so predictable. Zelenka loved Ronan. Ronan loved pancakes. He loved, supposedly loved, Shepard. But everyone else had a thing for the boss. He He was headed to Zelenka's lab when a supply closet door opened and out shot a hand. It latched onto the front of Rodney's jacket and pulled him in. "What the hell?" he started to shout when he realized he was looking at Shepard. A Shepard. He didn't know which one. "Hello?" "Hey, Rodney." "Definitely the real Shepard, then." "Why are you hiding in supply closets?" Rodney asked suspiciously. Shepard smiled brightly. Rodney recoiled. "You haven't happened to see Taylor recently, have you?" Shepard asked, unusually chipper. Recently?" Rodney responded. He tried to think fast. "How recent are we talking about?" Shepard rubbed the back of his neck. His smile faded a little. "Did she say anything to you about me?" "Maybe about what I see." "No, she hasn't," Rodney lied. "And if she has, why would you think I'd care? Do you think I don't have anything to do but sit around and gossip over what kind of guys John Shepard finds attractive?" Shepard's eyes went wide. "What?" "I mean women," Rodney said. "So she did talk to you," Shepard said accusingly. Rodney pinched the bridge of his nose. "Honestly, that's all she said. I have no idea what you see when you look at her. Although you could have told me you were bisexual. I thought we were..." He waved a hand. "Close. In only the way two semi-heterosexual guys can be." "We are," Shepard said. He looked uncomfortable now, instead of defensive. "I never said anything, because I don't really date all that much. And dating women was just always one of those things I was expected to do, you know?" "No, not really," Rodney said, honestly. "I was on the football team," Shepard explained, like it should have been obvious. "I have no idea how that relates to what we're talking about. So, while you're not dating men, would you tell me if you slept with Kiras?" Shepard looked taken aback. "Who's Kiras?" "Wait, the guy from the Kid Planet? That was 3 years ago." "Well," Rodney said sheepishly, "I just thought, since he was so interested in you and you're..." "Never mind, it's not important." "He wasn't interested in me," Shepard insisted, frowning. "He just wanted me to be the person he spent the last moments of his life with. It's not his fault the ritual called for naked touching. It was a ritual." "What?" Rodney asked shrilly. "Hey, you're seeing Taylor as Carter, right?" "Yeah, Colonel Carter," Rodney said carefully. "You know me and my masturbatory fantasies about Carter. I do love those perky blondes." "Okay, that's enough of that," Shepard said. The next time he lured Taylor into the labs for some assistance on something he could have easily asked anyone in Atlantis to do, he worked fast. "Major Lorne, could you come to the main laboratory right away?" he asked over the radio, turning away so Taylor couldn't hear. "Sure thing, Dr. McKay," Lorne's voice said in his ear. When he walked through the door a few minutes later, Taylor's device shifted her over to Elizabeth's form. Rodney rolled his eyes in disgust. God forbid Lorne be original and fall for someone else. "What can I do for you?" Lorne asked cheerfully. He beamed at Taylor. "That'll be all, Major," Rodney said. Rodney had only briefly considered spying on Shepard and Taylor so he could see who it was that Shepard loved. He'd almost called both of them into his lab at least 4 times, but each time he'd stopped himself at the last minute. Rodney was hardly the type of guy who preferred to live in blissful ignorance. But there was this little voice in the back of his mind, the kind of voice he usually ignored, that said, "You want to maintain the delusion, you have Shepard all to yourself." Knowing Shepard's love of all things badass, his mysterious love interest was probably Ronan, or Lorne, or, God help him, Caldwell. Maybe it was someone from Earth, and Shepard had been pining away this whole time. Maybe it was some dead guy Rodney could never compete with in a million years. If his seeing Shepard wasn't all a vicious lie meant to ruin his life, of course. If he was being really honest, Rodney would admit the thought of Shepard being in love with him made him a little queasy. So it was really unintentional when he stumbled across Shepard and Taylor alone in the commissary. And it was merely a coincidence he was wearing the ancient monocle. He'd been hoping to catch Elizabeth and Taylor walking through the corridors together, so he could figure out just why Elizabeth got that strange look on her face whenever the two women had been in the same room at the same time, in his pre-monocle period. When he saw a very handsome and very familiar person sitting at the table with Shepherd, himself, Dr. Meredith Rodney McKay, he did the only thing any reasonable person would do. "What the hell is going on here?" he demanded, disturbing the little tete-a-tete. Shepherd squinted at him. "Are you wearing a monocle?" "What I'm wearing is not as important as what you're doing." "Getting something to drink with Taylor?" Shepherd said. Taylor was looking at Rodney like he was something she'd found on the bottom of her shoe. Except it was with Rodney's own handsome, handsome face. "Rodney, you should not be here," she all but growled. Oh, that was bizarre. Taylor's voice coming out of his mouth. Shepherd seemed curious at her words, but Rodney would rather throw himself off the nearest balcony than let Shepherd know he'd been spying on everyone. He had his dignity, after all. "You know, Rodney, she's not really Colonel Carter," he said. Rodney looked at the image of himself and Shepherd at the table, at Shepherd all relaxed and smiling in a way he'd seen a thousand times over. It was at that point he realised the Medean Chancellor had been right, and he really had been looking at the person he loved the most. The problem with Rodney knowing Shepherd was in love with him was, well, knowing Shepherd was in love with him. And he loved Shepherd back. Probably. He hadn't been in many situations like this in his lifetime. Mostly, he spent his time trying to convince the other person he was worthy of dating. It was rare for him to fall for someone who loved him back, without him having to work at it. Katie Brown had gone out with him because she liked him, and look how that had turned out. What Rodney needed to do was be upfront with Shepherd about it. Shepherd loved him. There was little chance this could all go horribly wrong. The next day at lunch, he sat down at Shepherd's table. "John," he began immediately. Shepherd's eyebrows arched. "Meredith." Rodney was bursting to tell him everything. That he saw Shepherd just like Shepherd saw him, and they could run off, okay, fly away, into the sunset together. Or maybe just that they should go talk privately before one of the Marines gay-bashed them. But what came out was, "You know, I still can't believe you didn't tell me you were bi." "I can't believe you won't shut the hell up," Shepherd hissed, pointedly glancing around the commissary, which was mostly empty. "What was that?" Ronan asked, around his mashed potatoes. "Could we not talk about this in public?" Shepherd asked slowly. "Please, it's hardly like Ronan's public," Rodney scoffed. "Are you talking about Shepherd liking guys?" Ronan asked, "because I already knew." Betrayed, Rodney glared at Shepherd, who snapped, "I didn't tell him." "I watch a lot of movies with the Marines," Ronan said. He sucked a glob of gravy off his thumb. "There was a gay guy in Be Cool." "Who? The Rock?" Rodney asked. "You used The Rock as a basis for figuring out Shepherd's sexual identity?" Ronan nodded seriously. "It was funny. He had an afro. Made me think about picking my hair out." Rodney snorted. All that hair wouldn't fit in one room. It would get in a fight with Shepherd's hair for team supremacy, and... "Hey," Shepherd cut in. "I've learned a lot about Earth from movies," Ronan said. "Like how high school was the most important period of your life, and how everyone likes good-looking people the most." Rodney said. "That's not really true," Shepherd said. "See, they're just movies." "Also," Ronan continued, pointing a food-slathered finger at Rodney, "never stick your dick in apple pie." "Never stick it in anything you could otherwise eat," Rodney said wisely. Ronan looked pleased. "That's good advice." "Can we talk about something else?" Shepherd said. "You're not still mad at me for hanging out with Taylor, are you?" Rodney startled at the voice. He glanced over his shoulder at Shepherd in the doorway, his hands on his hips. "Don't sneak up on me like that, you lunatic. What are you doing down here? Are you following me?" Here was the formerly submerged room where Simpson had found the monocle. Rodney had tried everything he knew of to find out exactly what the device was, but he was out of resources. The database revealed nothing. Anything he tried to do to the monocle had no effect. If he hadn't been such a determined person, he would have written it off days ago. Instead, he'd had the brilliant idea of returning to the place of its origin. Perhaps there was something in this room that would give him a clue. Unfortunately, the wide blue room was mostly empty. There was something that might have been a desk mounted to one wall. That was where the monocle had been found, most likely. Shepherd shrugged. I was bored, he said easily, practically sauntering into the room. I finished all my backlogged paperwork, so I don't have anything to do. It doesn't look like Taylor's going to go back to normal anytime soon. Yeah, about that, Rodney muttered. Shepherd stopped walking when he was barely 2 feet away from Rodney. Why had Rodney never noticed how Shepherd was just about crawling all over him all the time? He swore he didn't used to be this stupid. Maybe it was all the sun he was getting, and all the time he was spending with Ronan. Oddly, Shepherd breathing down his neck gave him courage. If Shepherd wasn't going to be the brave one, it was up to Rodney to get them out of this mess. I need to say something to you, he said, a little louder than necessary. He drew himself up to his full height. Look, I know you see me when you look at Taylor. Shepherd's expression stilled. What? And I'm not upset. What makes you think I see you? Shepherd asked. Rodney felt his face flush. Well, remember the monocle? Zelenka thinks it was left by the ancients, and it allows me to see everyone's so-called one true love. Shepherd cocked his head. How does that work? I honestly have no idea, Rodney said. It's made of glass, but it has this reddish... Anyway, the point is, I saw you see me. Rodney, Shepherd started. His eyes darted left and right nervously. I wanted to tell you it's okay. It's more than okay, really, because I'm very flattered. I'm very flattered, and it's nice knowing. Shepherd interrupted him with, Cut the crap. We really don't need to have this discussion. I've heard it all before. You like me, but you don't like me. You're not gay. Rodney said, wincing. You are gay? Shepherd shouted. After you got mad at me for not coming out to you? Well, excuse me for not being in touch with my sexuality every moment of every day, Rodney countered, throwing his arms in the air. That doesn't even make sense. Does too? Does not. And are you saying you do like me? Shepherd was still shouting, which was probably a bad sign, but by this point Rodney was too worked up to care. Yes, Rodney yelled back. It was entirely possible he was flailing. Just a little. That's what I've been trying to tell you, if you stopped interrupting. Well, good, Shepherd exclaimed. Fine, Rodney shouted. Should we make out now? I don't see why not, Shepherd said, and jumped on him. 20 minutes later, they were both lying on the floor, panting, their pants and boxers around their ankles. Rodney's entire body felt like it was made of rubber, and from the stunned look on Shepherd's face, he was feeling the exact same way. That was the best sex I've ever had on a floor, Rodney said. Shepherd sighed. He sat up and pulled his pants back up over his nice, lean thighs. Rodney had a lot of plans for those thighs, now that he'd been up close and personal with Shepherd's mostly naked body. The funny thing is, Rodney said, moving to get his clothes back on and in order, I didn't even know I had feelings for you. I did, Shepherd said, but mostly it was me imagining shutting you up with, well, something other than words, let's say. Rodney eyed him. If you mean your cock, we're going to have to work our way up to that. Shepherd smirked. Then his gaze shifted and he asked, Hey, so this is what you use to find out what everyone sees Taylor as? He reached over and plucked the monocle off the floor, where it must have fallen out of Rodney's pockets during their rush to tear off each other's clothes. Will you put that down? Rodney asked as Shepherd put it on. He looked completely ridiculous. It's ancient. You don't know how to handle it like I do. Whoa, Shepherd interrupted. You've got to see this. So the device appears to be, essentially, for reading messages written using a certain kind of, well, we're not sure if it's ink or paint yet. Some of the chemists are working on that. Shepherd added, When I put on the monocle in that room, there are a bunch of messages written on the wall in ancient. And here I just thought you were going crazy, Rodney, Elizabeth replied, but she was smiling. She looked a little too happy about this, actually. I have to say, using a monocle as a tool for reading secret messages seems a bit silly. I always thought the ancients were more sophisticated than that. Well, the stuff written on the wall roughly translated to Ciceron is a butthead, Shepard said sheepishly. Right, Rodney said. Our best guess is it was a children's toy, like a decoder ring from a Cracker Jack's box. All that precious work for nothing. At least he knew some potentially embarrassing things about a good number of his peers now. It was the only thing that's keeping him going. Well, that and the inevitable sexual Olympics he'd have with Shepard later. Elizabeth folded her hands on her desk. She kept smiling, though, which was beginning to creep Rodney out. Well, that's interesting, I guess. Is there anything else you need to tell me about this device? Rodney and Shepard exchanged glances. No, they said simultaneously. Hey, Shepard said quietly, as soon as they were out of Elizabeth's hearing range. I need to talk to Elizabeth about some stuff. But do you want to have dinner later? Just the two of us? I mean, since we already, you know. He made a funny gesture Rodney couldn't decipher, but he got the gist. That sounds, very good, Rodney said, keeping his voice steady. I'll see you then. Shepard grinned. Yeah. He backed up a few steps without tearing his eyes away from Rodney's, before finally turning and heading back into the office. Rodney stood there for a brief moment, unable to move away, until Sergeant Campbell cleared his throat and said, I'll go back to drooling over Elizabeth, Rodney snapped, and Campbell's face turned red. Later, he was alone in his lab when Taylor came strolling in. Only she wasn't Shepard anymore. She was herself. Oh no. One roll with Shepard and I've fallen out of love with him already, Rodney cried. Taylor's brows knitted. I'm sorry, what was that? Rodney, the device stopped working. He was instantly relieved. I knew that. Did the projector run out of power? No, she replied. One corner of her mouth rose. I believe the device did what it was intended to do. Who's your true love? And more importantly, are you saying the Medeans actually created something to help single people find a match? While the rest of Atlantis saw me as something else they desired, there was one person who saw me as myself. She ducked her head, cheeks pinkening. Elizabeth. That was why she was behaving oddly around me. I believe it was a revelation for herself as well. At least 75% of Atlantis was in love with Elizabeth, but somehow this surprised him the most. Elizabeth? Really? He said in surprise. Then he realized how that sounded. Not that there's anything wrong with that. The opposite of wrong, really. It just never occurred to me that you two would be interested in each other. Although, I guess that makes sense, since there's no hierarchy keeping you apart. And she has a nice ass, Taylor said. The end.